Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another what's going to be an interesting episode of the Enterprise Dish, because I think Dux got a little complacent at being sitting still, and we find him yet in another location. Mr. Dux, where are you on this adventure?
I think we should create like a game, like instead of worst Waldo, worst Dux, right? I am in Stockholm, Sweden for Microsoft Ignite the Tour.
That well, and you are literally on the floor right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, I took a few minutes break because I'm hustling here. I'm doing booth duty, and I said, "Hey, can I be excused? I need to do a call with Brad." So here I am. I had to do it in front, so they believe what I told them.
So I just want to point out that no matter where you are in life, everyone has to do booth duty.
Exactly.
You can't get away from it. And honestly, booth duty isn't all that bad. It's just, it's how you connect directly with people. It's the hands on the ground. It is the front or first line workers, as Microsoft likes to call them. Exactly.
No, I love it. I love being here, you know, connecting with folks, just talking to customers and really getting scenarios on stuff that they need help with. And it's really good. You know, you won't find me in the speaker room unless I'm working on this live last minute.
Mm-hmm. Which nobody ever does, right? Nobody ever is putting together presentations last minute. Never happens. Never happens. Well, Dux, as you've been on the road the past couple weeks, Microsoft made a pretty big announcement. This one has been coming. They've been talking about this since Ignite. But the Surface Hub 2S, which is not the thing behind me, which somebody actually thought I had one, because they do look somewhat similar. The Surface Hub 2S is coming later this year, in June specifically. And it's we kind of know the story here. It's a conference room collaboration device. It's going to cost $9,000. What is your hot take on this new piece of hardware?
You know, my hot take is it's about time. And I think for that price point, it's digestible for a lot of companies. I mean, the first time Surface Hub came out, the price was so high. Even the last few announcements they had is still pretty high. But I think at $9,000, it's doable for a lot of companies, especially in scenarios like conference rooms and even moving it around. You don't have to get a lot of them. But based on what I saw and all the demos that they did, I think it's pretty good. You got to play with it, right?
Yeah, I've seen these things before. The 2X is clearly the high-end one that we're all kind of waiting for, but the 2S will be upgradable to it. The interesting thing that Microsoft is really doing with this is if you look at this device and say, you know what, I really just need the monitor, they're actually going to let you do that now. This is a pretty big change. Microsoft typically has always just sold the whole package, even with like their more prosumer line, the Surface Studio, you can't buy just the screen. But this is, you know, for a company that just wants the display, that's now an option.
So what do you mean just the display? So you don't need to get the whole room system?
Correct. So on the back of the device, there's a thing that kind of looks like a Lazy Susan almost. It's a big circular disc thing that allows the display to turn and rotate. But inside of that, there's a Core i5 processor, 128 gigs of storage, a whole bunch of RAM and all that stuff that actually powers the device. But Dux, if you're sitting there saying, look, we've got these awesome machines lying around, we don't need the compute unit in there. You can buy it without that and basically just turn it into a very nice and flexible monitor.
How much does that cost?
We don't know yet, because that's a very, very interesting question, because I suspect it's not going to be cheap, because we could probably ballpark how much a Core i5 computer costs, right? Maybe $1,000 in that form factor, something like that. It's still going to be expensive, but again, this is kind of the Microsoft future, at least we think, from their hardware perspective, is this modular design. Because what you'll be able to do with the 2S is when the 2X hardware comes out, you're going to be able to just pull that out, put the new hardware in, and upgrade your machine without having to buy a new display.
Sounds like the new Teslas, right? Where there's a new autopilot chip now, you can put in old Teslas.
Yeah, the interesting thing, and not so much interesting, I think we all know that displays typically last a lot longer than the compute inside, right? The compute might not die necessarily, but it just gets old and it gets outdated and it's not as fast. And so when Microsoft announced their Surface headphones at that event, I talked to Stevie Batiste and he's like, yeah, we realize that displays have years, like lifespans in the decades potentially. And he's like, we're trying to figure out how to make our displays last longer and just give you an option to upgrade on the fly.
Yeah, that makes sense. And boy, I can't wait for the pricing on that. Because especially if you have, you know, beefy computers lying around and it can power those displays, why not?
Exactly. And to that point, you might even need something that's more powerful than what Microsoft offers, if depending on what you want to run on that. Granted, it is designed for Teams. No surprise there. It's designed for that office collaboration. But we absolutely know that there's maybe architecture firms or manufacturing firms that want to run natively AutoCAD on that display. And now they'll be able to do so if they really want.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah, it's coming in June. If you're looking for pre-orders or if you want to get one of these things, I suspect you get on the road pretty quick with this, because the last time Microsoft was doing Surface Hub stuff, it sold out surprisingly quick and was very hard to get them later in the life cycle. I suspect that these are going to be a little bit more popular and a little bit more highly manufactured. At least that's what Microsoft tells me. And so sooner rather than later, if you're really, really interested in these things.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Most likely I'll put in an order, because one of our conference rooms needs one of these. But at 9K, I think it's worth it.
Now the sweetener on this, Dux, is that if you wait a year, you can get an 84-inch.
But it's not going to be 9K.
No, it's not going to be 9 grand. I honestly bet that there's probably a 1 in front of that 9 when that thing ships.
Right.
So that is coming in 2020, and we will see. Other things happening in the Office Enterprise world this month, I should say, is that Slack, I think, Dux, we could probably agree, is the biggest competitor to Teams, is now offering actual Office 365 native integrations. I wonder if they're doing that because they feel pressure from Teams, or, you know, what made them to decide to do that now after being around for so many years?
You know, a couple of things, in my opinion, right? So first and foremost, I think you've already seen this movie play out back in the days of OneDrive, right? When Microsoft introduced integration of Office in OneDrive, where you can go to OneDrive and Office documents. Shortly after, Box did the same thing, integration with Office 365. So we're seeing this play out, because I'm sure it's not like Slack decided to do this, but I'm sure there were feedback from customers who were like, well, we're going to use Teams because Office 365 is built in. You know, our documents are there, this, that, the other. So with that feedback, I'm sure they went back and looked at what Office 365 had, the APIs, and fully built into it. I haven't had the chance to see or try this. You know, I assume the experience is still not going to be as integrated and as seamless as how the other Office 365 workloads is in Teams. So, for example, how SharePoint works, how OneNote works, how Planner works. And I think those are the integrations, to me, that are really tight-knit with Teams. It's not just about looking at a Word document or an Excel.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I was thinking while you were talking, I wonder if Microsoft would see on the back end, and this might, they may not do this because this feels a little awkward, but if they could see that people are using Slack and Office 365, I wonder if they would start pitching that individual client Teams a lot more.
Yeah, possibly, but I also believe, you know, Slack will always be there, and the audience for Slack, in my opinion, is really different than the audience for Teams, right? First and foremost, Microsoft already had that built-in audience in Teams, straight up Office 365, whereas Slack, primarily, it started in the dev world, IT world, you know, and a lot of IT organizations are still using Slack, and which is perfectly fine. Now, you know, certainly from a business perspective, spend and cost perspective, they might want to move to Teams, but certainly, in my opinion, the audience size, people using Teams, if not already, will be much more than Slack.
Oh, I fully agree. And it's going to be a transition. Slack, and I tend to agree as well, Slack has a very good role in the enterprise world, right? It's not a product that I personally don't ever want it to go away. We're better off with competition. And Slack serves a role, because in the smaller companies, we often see them spin up real quick G Suite and a Slack, and then just go off and running. And then as they grow up and mature, they roll up into Office 365. And it's a good tool for the right audience. And then to your point, for that deep integration and collaboration, you really just can't match what Teams is doing.
Yep, 100%.
Which rolls perfectly into the next topic here. This is one of my favorite things from Microsoft, and for all the weird reasons of when they bought LinkedIn, LinkedIn had 10,000 people on G Suite. And Microsoft said, we're going to make some lemonade out of this. And rolling out now is the ability built into Office 365 is to actually migrate from G Suite to Office 365. They finally had the reason to do it. And now they're making those tools available to Office 365 users who are migrating.
I think this is great. In fact, Microsoft already provided this service through their fast track benefits to their customers. So for those not familiar with fast track, if you're an Office 365 customer, you have entitlements called fast track. And fast track does a lot of stuff, right? But one of the initial things that the fast track center lets you do is if, you know, depending on the size of your subscription and the size of your company, Microsoft offers migration service, and one of which is coming from Google to Office 365. So in the past, they provided it as a service, but like you said, now they have a built-in tool built into the platform that you can use. And, you know, they kind of sort of did this already with SharePoint. I think it's been out 2-3 years now. They also have a SharePoint on-premises migration tool and also FileShare that you can migrate to SharePoint Online and OneDrive as well.
Interesting.
So, I think this is a good thing. I suspect that they'll start introducing tools for other sources as well and other providers.
I mean, that makes complete sense. And the one thing to keep in that kind of jumped into my mind as you're talking about this, I would suspect that a lot of the companies maybe migrating from G Suite to Office 365 might be either A, potentially new Microsoft customers and may not know about Fast Track. And so having that just built in where they can just go click a mouse and be like, oh, you know, we only have 100 people. Right. Microsoft doesn't care about us. And they can just go do it themselves and make life a little bit easier.
Absolutely. And certainly some may be thinking, well, is this the end of, you know, partners or companies providing migration tools? Absolutely not, right? So for example, we provide migration tools for all sources. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that Microsoft is providing a lot of these initial and basic tools, which is great. So we for example, we have a migration tool that takes G Suite to Office 365, but we can do a lot of the complex migration and we can do it really fast.
Right.
You know, our cloud migration tools could do up to 100 terabytes a day. We've had customers coming from G Suite or Box or Dropbox where they have so much data and they have a deadline when they have to move all these things. Mm-hmm. So I think the pizza is big enough for people to take advantage of out of the box capabilities that Microsoft provides and what partners like us can offer as well.
Oh, absolutely. Because Microsoft is good at providing a baseline service. And it's when you get into that complexity, migrations are something you really don't want to screw around with, right? You can't knock the whole company offline. You don't have duplicate emails and all that stuff. So having outside experts is always going to be a viable option, mostly because when you're doing a migration, you don't want to be learning while you migrate. You want to be just migrating and getting over and just, because most companies, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dux, they don't migrate all that often. Right. This is sort of a once in a generation thing. And so you want to make sure that when you do it right.
And 100%, especially today in the age of the cloud, hopefully you do it well, you do it right, you move one time, that's it. I mean, back in the days of on-premises technology, yeah, every 3 years when there's a technology refresh, you keep migrating to the next version. But this is your one time, right? And like you said, you got to do it right. And also, one advice I typically give to organizations, especially if you have massive data sets, doesn't matter where it is, be it Google or on-prem, mm-hmm. you don't have to migrate everything. Because oftentimes people tell me, well, you don't understand, Docs. We have 1 petabyte of data. But I guarantee you, of that 1 petabyte, more than half may be duplicate, redundant, or just plain junk that you don't need.
Good sage advice right there. All right, Docs. I know you're busy and you're out on the floor, but we got a question in from the reader this week, and this is the perfect question for where you are at. A reader wrote in and says, hey, Brad, can you ask Dux how he deals with jet lag?
All right. So in the 16 years of doing this, I've been traveling a lot, and I feel like as I get older, I travel more. So I had to figure this out early on. So really, two things, right? Number one, when I jump on a plane, I sleep as much as I can. But number two, wherever I get to, the next day, first thing in the morning, I go out running. So I love running. So like this morning, I ran 4 miles here in Stockholm. And when I run, it just resets my clock. And the other thing I found out, if I don't stay in a place for too long, 2-3 days is fine. I don't really have jet lag. I go home back to Washington, D.C., I'll be fine. But if I stay longer, if I stay like a week here in Europe, or I'm in Stockholm with 6 hours difference, it's gonna mess me up more if I stay more than 3 days. So running and I sleep on the plane.
Gotcha. So what I took away from that, for my own personal sake, is that you try to keep your same habits up no matter where you are, because that's helping keeping your body clock aligned.
Yes, And I take it easy on overindulging on food and over drinking alcoholic drinks.
Oh yeah, that can definitely play a big part of it. And so, which brings me to my other question for you, Dux, and I haven't asked you this. Are you going to Microsoft Build Conference this year?
Great question. Unfortunately, this is the first time in a few years I'm not able to go. There are some family commitments I have to attend to.
Sure.
But I'll be there in spirit for sure.
Gotcha. Well, we will miss you up in the great Northwest, although I can totally understand why you probably don't want to get on a plane and travel all the way across the U.S. because that's got to be, it's about a 4.5 hour flight for me. It's probably about 5 hours for you at least to get there.
Yeah.
So that's a,
the crazy thing here is coming to Europe is pretty much the same time as me going to Seattle, maybe 30 minutes or an hour more here, but it's pretty much similar.
Oh yeah, it's the same for me. There's a direct flight from Cincinnati to Paris, and it's like 45 minutes longer than getting to Seattle. It's kind of nuts.
But it costs 4 times more, though.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. All right, Dux, as we wrap it up here, you got anything else before we shut it down?
Hey, listen, since we talked about migration, I invite everyone to check out our migration platform. Just go to appcoin.com and look for our new migration platform. We can move data as much as 100 terabytes per day. So come and try it out.
That's a lot of data.
We'd love to see what you think. Yeah.
That is a lot of data. And if you want to see Dux and myself, honestly, in person, you can actually just hang out with us in Washington, D.C. at the Shift Happens Conference. There'll be a link below the video. And Dux, we appreciate you taking time out of booth duty from the show floor in Stockholm. You are a man who's...
Actually, tell you what.
What?
Tell you what. For the first 5 people who wants to go to Shift Happens for free, ping Brad, and he'll give you a code, right? So
Whoa.
If you're listening to this, watching this, first 5 people who pings Brad will give you a code. You go register, you come for free. So we'll hang out.
That is a freebie of epic proportions. Well, we will definitely be hyping that up. And Dux, you have safe travels home. Continue to keep rocking out in Stockholm for us. And we will catch everybody else right back here next time on the Enterprise Dish.